views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Start the adventure. Live the dream. International living, exploring, investing, and retiring. Light on Living Abroad shines the spotlight on how life can be better with life abroad. We'll explore owning investment properties in emerging markets, how to manage those assets effectively to increase your wealth. You'll learn the important steps involved in buying, renting, and building overseas. With safety lifestyle lessons and guidance to where to enjoy the most beautiful scenic locations, you'll discover where your best international investment property is waiting for you. Light on Living Abroad takes you there. Welcome on board.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us on this edition of Light on Living Abroad. I'm your host, Lisa Berry, and as we build on this series of great adventure, travel, and investing, we are happy to have with us again Dean Studebaker. He is the COO of Compass Group International, the number one real estate consulting firm in Costa Rica. He's a featured guest speaker throughout Latin America and Central America. Dean is based in Costa Rica and Thailand and is currently working with developers throughout Latin America and the Caribbean. He's specializing in working with developers, investors, and brokerages from the Latin America to Asia on projects from tax-free zones, hotels, to high-density affordable housing. And the fun part, a regularly featured host for HGTV's House Hunters International, which is, of course, the number one real estate TV show for the HGTV network. And finally, he's currently working on a new TV show, which was well, already got it out, Living on $1,000 a month. So my goodness, welcome, Dean.
Well, hello, Lisa. It's nice to be chatting with you again.
Yes, and you're always somewhere fun or going somewhere fun or been back from somewhere fun. So, and where are you today?
I think the last time we talked, I was in Costa Rica, and I am back down here again right now, actually.
Oh, lovely. So we're all jealous then right now.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, if you're up at your offices in Toronto, I believe, yeah, I'm at about 85 degrees right now, so I don't know what you're doing up there.
You know what? I'm going to say this just because normally it's not a big weather talk, but no, this is a weather talk because this is why people go to Costa Rica. We are literally just going to get our winter, and by tomorrow we should be hitting minus 26 Celsius in the country areas. But so tonight we actually got the heaters on today. So yes, and that brings
well,
us to the big
good,
thing.
Well, good luck with that. I enjoy the next 6 months. I will be thinking about you because over the next 6 months, I won't see anything below probably 75 degrees at the for the most part. So,
yeah, exactly. You know what's really neat is this is a very special time. So right now you and I are doing a show. It's November, and I am now a little bit more familiar with Costa Rica and its beautifulness and what it offers. And so this actually starts to see like the really perfect season, doesn't it, in November? Like this is where you're out of the woods for hurricanes and everything. So give us, like, because we're talking temperature, like, what is the climate like and how does it change and where is that? What's going on there?
Well, first off, one of the nice things about Costa Rica is the fact that we don't get hurricanes in Costa Rica. So that's one of the, now occasionally, like one every 150 years might graze through it a little bit. But for the most part, the way Costa Rica is set up geographically, we don't get them. Weather-wise, we generally stay in that Costa Rica has many climates. I mean, because Costa Rica has very mountain regions that are, you know, like my house in the capital city of San Jose. It is all, you know, right now it is probably about 75 degrees there. I'm actually up in Guanacaste at the beach working on one of our projects. But my house in Costa Rica in San Jose is roughly, you know, at about 4,500 feet elevation. So it does cool down a little bit. The nice thing about Costa Rica, like National Geographic, to Discovery, it's, you know, all those types of groups, you know, usually every other year or so, Costa Rica gets voted by them as the best weather in the world for all year round overall temperature and climate. So, and we're going into, it's November, so we're going into the heart of the season. We're just coming out of the rain season, or the, in October is always the, has the most rainfall of the month. But now we're going into the high season. And since we're down here by the equator, we're basically going into summertime down here, while North America is getting ready to go into winter.
Okay, so yeah, that's where you're going to see the spike in people traveling down and experiencing it. Now, I learned a very interesting word. I've never heard of this before, to be honest, and I was like, what does that mean? And this is perfect that we're talking about this. You just mentioned you're in the northern part of Costa Rica, and I just read that where you mentioned, and now I can't remember the name of the city. What was the name of the city again?
I'm actually, there's, put it this way, there's seven regions, or seven states, so to speak, in the country of Costa Rica. Costa Rica is about the size of West Virginia in the United States from a landmass standpoint. But there's seven you know, geographical locations or states, so to speak, much like you up in Canada, you have your various, you know, sections of the country, you know, from Alberta, and, you know, and whatnot. I'm in Guanacaste, which is on the north, which covers most of the northern Pacific coastline. And then inland a little bit. I actually happen to be at a city right now. I'm in actually a city called Playa Hermosa, which is very close to the to Liberia, which is the largest city in Costa Rica behind San Jose, the capital city. And that's where the other international airport's located. And I happen to be in Hermosa, which is, you know, roughly about 20 minutes from the airport. I'm in the heart of the what's called the Papagayo Gulf, or the Gulf of the Papagayo, which Papagayo is rooster, or it translates to rooster. So I'm in the Rooster Gulf right now. Again, enjoying the weather and enjoying all that's going on down here. But I have some projects I'm working on here, so this is where I need to be right now.
Okay, and you know what? That's okay. So the northern northern Pacific side. And what I learned the word was it was a dry forest, because everybody's heard of the rainforest. So that's, you know, everybody's like, oh, the rainforest, because this is quite the island for rescuing and preserving and respecting nature and wildlife and land. But when I read the word dry forest, it actually stopped me in my tracks. I was like, what is that? So you are actually in that area where there's like, so what is the difference between the rainforest? Yeah, and I know they're obvious, but.
Yeah, we'll call the dry forest or the dry jungle. And actually we got hit pretty good with rain up here this year, but Guanacaste, especially the northern part of it, has kind of its own microclimate. It doesn't get as humid as other parts of Costa Rica. Like if you're in the southern zone or in the central zone, or you're on the Caribbean side, it's much more humid. Guanacaste just happens to have kind of a unique section, or it's a unique section where the pressure systems from the north and the south kind of meet, and it just kind of stabilizes things a little bit, and it doesn't really allow one or the other, be it humidity or dry weather, to kind of overtake. So it does, and then the way it's geographically located, based on how currents and the jet stream flow and wind flow is, it doesn't push a lot of rain into this area most of the time. The rest, 75% of the country could be getting pounded with rain, and Guanacaste, especially in this section where I'm at, could be, you know, the sun could be out. So it just kind of has, it's just kind of a unique setup the way it is. But that's why they call it the dry jungle or the dry forest up here. But it can get rain.
Yeah, and does that mean like more like the most, the people who come down, is that where they're all going? Like, so is that going to be the busiest part of Costa Rica? Like the most?
Yeah, in my opinion, this is the busiest area of the country. This is where I concentrate the most on. This is where all the major resorts are. This is where most of the activity is going on. When you're in Guanacaste, it really extends between two cities, as far south as the Playa Tamarindo area, all the way up basically to the airport or the Gulf of Papagayo, where I'm at right now. That's about a 40-50 mile stretch. And in that section between Tamarindo and the Gulf of Papagayo, that is kind of the heart of the country as far as the most opportunities, the most business, and things like that. And a lot of it has to do with the fact because of the weather, and then the easy accessibility it is because the international airport is just right in your backyard. So you literally, unlike most countries around the world, or vacation destinations, whether it's in the Bahamas, the Caribbean, to other Latin American countries, or even Mexico, usually when you fly in, you have a good, maybe hour and a half to four or five, 6 hours. Maybe an additional plane, a puddle jumper plane you got to take to get to your destination. And that's what makes this part of the world or this part of Costa Rica really unique. That's why all the big major five-star type resorts, four season level type resorts are all in this area because of the convenience to get here. And where most of the expats move to as well.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I just learned, of course, that it's about a 45-minute, if I was to cross, from one side of Costa Rica to the next, about a 45-minute plane ride, but it's about a three-hour drive. When you're saying that about, like, that's the most, the biggest, the tall hotels are up there and everything, when we're talking about how they're living, like, that if that's the built-up place, is that where you'd find most of the money? Is that where all the money's being exchanged and circulated, the jobs and the currency and everything? Is that what's busy there?
Well, technically, yeah. How that would fit me, from a currency standpoint in Costa Rica, Costa Rica is very much tied to the U.S. dollar. Costa Rica has its own currency called the colón. And the easiest way to kind of describe it is it's generally 2-to-1. So, for example, you have whatever the colón currency is, just times it by 2. So if you had 500 colones, you times it by 2, you'd have a dollar. If you have 10,000 colones, times it by 2, that gives you $20. So that's basically how it works. So the overall value of the colone is, as compared to the dollar, has been very strong. Right now, it's a good time to be down here because the exchange is exceptional, which allows you to stretch your dollar if you're an expat living down here. I know you love the word expat. If you're if you're an expat living here, your money gets stretched out quite a bit further right now, especially the way the economy has been. So my partner and I, Will, we do our show, and we're creating our show of living on $1,000 a month around the world. And Costa Rica is very, very doable to be able to live, comfortably on just $1,000 a month. So if you're a husband and wife that's worked and retired, your Social Security between the both of you generally is $1,500 to $2,000. So you'll just on your Social Security alone, you'll be more than able to live comfortably down in Costa Rica. Minus that, what I always clarify is most people, if they do retire, they generally sell their property in Canada or in the U.S. And with the proceeds from that, they come down and they pay all cash for their property here. So they're not carrying a mortgage. And once the mortgage is, if you don't have a mortgage, $1,000 will cover all your bills, your basic expenses, and your food and all of that. So Costa Rica is definitely a country you can live on $1,000 a month.
Okay, so I love that you did clarify that. So yes, they've sold their house, they're packing up, they're getting down there. I do have a question. So when like an expat, they're literally picking up and moving and they're living somewhere else, can they bring their animals?
Yes, they can. Actually Costa Rica, unlike many countries where you have to go through a pretty stiff quarantine process, with Costa Rica, it's actually quite simple. You just have to take care of, you can go to any major website in Costa Rica people bring their pets even on vacation. If you want to just find that out, you just go to, Costa Rica, pet, .com or, anything along those lines, just the Costa Rica, government page, there'll be a section on pets and it will explain what you need. You have to just have certain, your dog has to have certain vaccinations done to it that are pretty standard in the United States and Canada, which you would already have done. And then you just need to bring a copy of that documentation with you, that it shows that your dog or for you, your cat, is up to code, so to speak. I'm not a pet owner, so
We can tell that.
I travel too much, and I do not have. I love dogs, but I would never. That's why I don't have kids, and I because I I travel so much, it'd be unfair. It'd be very selfish. So I even though I love dogs, it just would be unfair. So, but yeah, it's quite simple to bring your dogs in.
I do love that you actually really said that, because when people travel and they can't bring animals, one thing about Costa Rica, and I learned this, and I'd love to hear if you've how many of these you've experienced, but they actually have 29 national parks and 19 wildlife refugees. Like at eight, but like there's so, I was just like completely surprised at their, considering how small they are, how they are so respectful of animals, wildlife, marine life, just land itself. And so have you, because you love dogs and you don't have it, but you probably get to see them all over the place. You get to see all kinds of animals.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Costa Rica, I mean, where to even begin? I could throw a lot of stats at you, or statistics, but there are hundreds of specific animal and plant life. And when I say animal, that would include everything down to, you know, from bugs to insects, birds, et cetera, et cetera. There are hundreds of species of both animals and plants and flowers that are specific just to Costa Rica. One of the things that it, from a biodiversity standpoint, which is kind of how they look at it, is Costa Rica covers, if I'm not mistaken, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, like 0.03% of the world's land mass in Costa Rica, but yet it carries roughly 5% of the world's animal and floral species. So when you stop and think about that, if it only has, you know, Costa Rica is, for a land mass in the globe, only has 0.03%, but 5% of the world's variety of animals and plant life can be found in Costa Rica. That's why Costa Rica is always called, you'll always see from a marketing standpoint, not only from Costa Rica, but you'll see it on, you know, when National Geographic does their shows here, or Discovery, or if you've seen any of my HGTV shows or my partner Will's shows for HGTV on in Costa Rica, you'll always hear us talk about Costa Rica is the most biodiverse country in the world. Based on, again, all the animal and plant life combined, with the relative size per square meter, or per square mile that the country is, it's actually quite amazing. 25% of the country, is regulated by Costa Rican law to be reserved for national parks and for park services. So they've already designated 25% of the country is technically a national refuge or a national park. That will not change. If anything, it will grow more positively rather than, you know, they won't detract from it. They'll eventually add more to it. So Costa Rica takes its animal and plant life. It takes its biodiversity. It takes its mantra of being one of the greenest countries on the planet. It's a country that will actually be carbon neutral by 2020. It's on pace to become a carbon neutral country by 2020.
I read that they're actually using the volcanoes, and they're using that to create electricity, like the power, they're generating power from the volcanoes. Do you know much about that one? Okay.
Yeah, because Costa Rica, one of the other unique things about the Costa Rica, many people, especially if you live in the Western United States, all the way down to Australia, if you've heard of what's called the Ring of Fire, which is a volcanic, you know, line that pretty much starts from Australia, it goes all the way through the Pacific, cutting through Hawaii and up into Alaska, and then comes straight down into Costa Rica. And along that line or that tectonic plate, that's where you find a vast majority of the volcanoes of the world. And Costa Rica really has, if I'm not mistaken, has 7 volcanoes. 2 of them are active. They're consistently active. They're always kind of, you know, spouting off every now and then, or, you know, at nighttime when you're at one of the locations, Arenal, which is one of the most popular destinations in the country, the most visited locations. At nighttime, you could be sitting out having an amazing dinner and in the jungle, and you just look up at the volcano in the backdrop and you see a little bit of the lava coming out. So it's actually quite spectacular. But because of all the volcanoes and the energy behind the volcanoes and the water that's generated around the volcanoes, they transform that into electrical power. And that's how Costa Rica gets a lot of its electrical energy. I won't get too technical and bore people on how all that system works, but yes, it does. They do derive a lot of their electricity because of that.
That is absolutely, it's a very beautiful way of handling things. And in fact, with everybody, the way Costa Rica works, everything seems to have that intense level of respect and beauty. And if you could share how, like, even when I was reading about the political stability there and how they're so just calm and loving and cooperative, how are they doing this? They're the only country doing this. They're just amazing.
A couple of basic things about Costa Rica. One, it's actually the oldest democracy in the Western Hemisphere. So they've been politically stable since its inception. It's one of the few politically stable countries in Latin America. So it operates on a system. I generally kind of compare it, in the sense of the United States, where it's a three-tier system. In a sense that they have an executive branch, they have a legislative branch, and they have a judicial branch. So they have a Senate, they have a House, and they have an executive branch and a presidency. So they work similarly, or it has a similar system to that of the United States, but it's a very politically stable country. Like I said, the most politically stable country in Latin America. One of the reasons it's able to be so politically stable is because the United States has a treaty with it that basically says we will protect Costa Rica by all means necessary and at any cost. So no one is really stupid enough in Latin America to mess with Costa Rica because Big Brother will come down and take care of that. So Costa Rica has the biggest, baddest brother and dog on the block backing it up. So right. No one really messes with Costa Rica. And it's one of those countries that has another valuable nickname or a prominent nickname, and they call it the Costa Rica. Well, you'll hear the phrase, it's the Switzerland of the Americas. And the reason why is because in 1948, the Costa Rican government decided to get rid of its army because that was when they entered into, and roughly around that time is when they entered into a treaty with the United States saying we would protect them. They decided then at that point, since we got, our big brother just up the street a little bit ready to protect us, let's get rid of our military and we'll take the money we were spending, which was 6% of their GDP at the time, was going towards their military. And they committed that 6% to their education system. And that is why Costa Rica has the highest literacy rate in the Americas. Costa Ricans grow up knowing how to read and write. I always kind of joke, I'm a proud American, but the education system and the kids coming out of Costa Rica are smarter than ours. They just are. They're much more literate as far as basic writing and reading skills. And that's been consistent for many years. And a lot of that's attributed to the fact that Costa Rica doesn't have an army or a military. So they devote a lot of funds, or all those funds get routed into their public education system.
Very smart people. And I really do mean that. But and now what language are they learning? When you say that the literacy rate is this high, is it is it English and something else? Or?
Yeah, their primary language is Spanish, but their kids are taught English. And then generally they have a third language. So many kids will graduate high school being able to, they'll obviously speak Spanish. Most of them will fluently be able to speak English as well. At least the ABC students, there's always some D and F students that float around, right? That didn't pay attention in class. And they may not know English like they're supposed to, but they may not even know their own Spanish, because they're just dumb students. Sorry, Costa Rica.
I think they're just distracted by all the beauty that's around them. And they're like, I could be out surfing or snorkeling or hiking.
There you go. A lot of kids stay the hell of school and they spend all day on the beach surfing their whole lives. And you know what? They're happy as hell for it. So, that's what they choose to do. But they'll graduate knowing English in English and Spanish, and then they can take a third language. Generally, it will be anywhere from Portuguese to French are generally the two other languages they look at. Mandarin is now introduced into the country, so there is a lot of students slowly starting to learn Mandarin. So, yes, the Costa Rican students are very well educated. And in their private school system, it's a little bit different than their public system, but I'll give you an example. In their private system, kids are, and the private system is huge because it's very inexpensive, so people can afford it. In their private system, they rotate English. So, for example, Each year they have two classes, and they call it reading and language, and that's generally geared. Those two classes are taught in English, but their math and science rotates every year. So, for example, if you went to kindergarten and you had science that started off in Spanish, well, come and your math was in English, then when you go to first grade, it rotates. So every other year, that science and math will rotate, being taught to them in English. So that, again, forces them to do that. And one of the other benefits of the fact of their education system is, since they're the most literate, they're the most educated country in Latin America, that affords them an actual dedicated middle class. I mean, there's well over 380, if I'm not mistaken, 380 of the Fortune 500 companies of the world have offices and operations inside of Costa Rica because of the fact of their education there. And that also attributes to a very low crime rate because, as you know, areas where there's no education and education is horrible, those generally will always be what? The highest in crime. Countries that are highly educated generally are the countries that are very low in crime. So that's what also makes separates Costa Rica from so many other countries in the Western Hemisphere.
Okay, wait, now that you said that, that is it. So we can see here, education is super important. Now, when you say the private education is much, you know, it's less expensive than in other parts of the world, if we were to compare, because we're going to have to go into the next show when we do it, we'll talk about actual, you know, money and what how much things cost. But when you're talking about private schooling, what would is it monthly? Is it yearly? Like, do kids go to school all year long?
It varies in the country. A lot of private schools are year long. And it just kind of depends on different sections of the country. Just like in the United States, each kind of section or quote, quote, county is allowed to make their own rules as far as how the education, you know, as far as the calendar is concerned. But for most private schools, it's year round. And you can go to private school roughly anywhere from $300 to $500 a month will get you into a faith-based private school at a level, like I said, of anywhere between $300 to $500 a month, which, again, a faith-based education system or private school, let's say in California, would be at least $3,000 to $4,000 a month. And I would honestly tell you that most of the teachers that are in these schools are U.S., you know, U.S. educated. You also have a lot of retired expats. People that were teachers in the United States, and they volunteer or part-time teach in a lot of the private schools in Costa Rica. So you could go to a Costa Rican school, private school, and you'll find that a lot of the teachers may be, you know, former or retired teachers from Canada, from the United States, that they work 2 days a week, and then they bring in a couple other retired teachers to do that class for 2 days a week, and they just kind of rotate that out. So it's actually pretty amazing system the way they do it.
I'm so glad you shared that. And just because we were talking on the last show, as we wrap up this show, the last one that Will and I were doing and with Bangkok there, and thinking of, you can retire literally at any age. We really distinguish that you could be in your 30s, you could be 40s, you could be 50s, all the way up. So somebody who is retiring may still have school-age children. And so this is a lovely place to bring not just themselves, but bring the whole family, bring the kids down and put them in school. But I know on our next episode, because we're going to wrap up this one, but on our next episode, I am so excited to finding out from you how people can retire. Can they move? How can they live? How can they invest in Costa Rica? Because now we know how absolutely beautiful, lovely, and wonderful it is. Let's wait till our next show and cover all those areas.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the area I'm in Guanacaste right now, I mean, from a housing standpoint, again, housing is always subjective because if someone wants a $10 million house, of course, I can find it for them here in Costa Rica. But in general, you're going to be able to be in that $200,000 to $300,000 range for a very, very, very nice condo or single family home or townhome on the Pacific Ocean. That same house, if it was duplicated on the Pacific Ocean in California, would be just add six more zeros to it. So it would be a $2 million house or a $3 million house.
Incredible.
So basically,
Well, you know, let's save that for the next show. Because we're gonna wrap up here. And the next show, let's talk about housing costs and how amazing and affordable it is to live in Costa Rica. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next show.